Tell you what, my Google speaker is not learning. Like it says it learns, right? But I think it has like very prescribed things, program things that it learns. Like, oh, tell me your birthday and it'll remember your birthday. But that's only because Google has programmed it to remember that. It doesn't actually learn, right? Like I, for example, I tell it, hey, when I say word, I mean yes, right? I've actually told it this. I was like, I want you to remember this. I want to teach you something. It says, okay. And then after I said it, you know, I go, you know, word means yes. It goes, okay, I will remember that. And then like 5 minutes later, it asks me a question and I go, word. and it goes, I do not understand. I'm like, what the fuck? This is very simple. I'm teaching you language. It doesn't do it. Although it does call me Pimp Daddy Mac. And I think that's adorable.
That's awesome. That's awesome. Well, it's Sunday morning. I'm wearing pajamas. So you know what that means.
What's it mean, Brad?
It's time for the Sucks Podcast.
Yes, sir. You didn't let me tell you what it means to me, Brad.
All right. What does it mean to you?
It means it's my favorite part of the week, Brad. I love your pajamas. And one day I dream of a world in which you get free pajamas because there's a pajama company out there that does not advertise on podcasts yet.
Yeah.
But they will.
Yeah,
they will, Brad.
Sure.
Quality.
Uh-huh.
Silk.
Oh, man.
Just beautiful.
Keep going. Keep going.
I don't know. You do the straight ad read. I'm the clown. I don't know how to pitch things like that. I'm just like, nope. Pajamas. Get them.
Well, I'm your host, Brad.
And I am Dave.
And this, of course, is a podcast where we talk about design, intentional and otherwise, and all the ways that UX,
user experience design,
impact us every day. We are lovers, not experts.
Sweet lovers, Brad.
But we are, you know, kind of getting there week after week. We're getting more and more towards the expert spectrum, side of the spectrum. We started this podcast as a way to talk about why things were made the way that they are and where those design decisions might have gone off the rails. Good morning, Dave. How are you doing?
I'm doing good, Brad. I'm realizing I need to close a lot of things on my computer. I don't know if you heard bings and dings and bloops and bleeps, but I'm doing swell. It's a nice Sunday morning. I got a lot of work to do, but how are you doing this week? You were under the weather a few weeks ago, but then what happened to your audio last week, man? That was just a nightmare for me to edit, and I'm sure people have heard it.
Oh my gosh, apologize. I really feel badly for anybody who listened to last week's episode as their first episode, and they thought that's like representative of the quality of the podcast, of the recording that we do, because that was not great, and I apologize for that. I don't know what happened, but it was my audio. I have to take responsibility for it, so to you, Dave, as our audio editor, and to our users and our listeners, I'm so sorry.
Well, I think, these things happen, Brad. We tested the audio this time, you know, don't move in a weird way to unplug things. And I think we should be good. But it's a good reminder for our guests. We need to test them before that. And I need to shut down a lot of these windows. So let's do that.
Dave, this is another big episode for us. It's so big.
How big is it, Brad?
So big. So big, it's intimidating. And it sucks first. This topic is so big, so important. We had to bring in two expert guests.
What?
Two, not one, but two.
I am thrilled. I am excited about this, Brad. I am super. Should we skip the news, or do we have news this week?
We'll get into the news, but I want to get our guest take on the news as well, because it's relevant to our main topic.
Great. Okay.
Our first guest, Scott Gillis. Scott is an Emmy award-winning game and experience designer. He has been in interactive media for over 15 years and has an MFA from the USC School of Cinematic Arts and Interactive Media program. By the way, Scott, that's a program that I did not get into.
Oh.
He has been at some giant companies, including Electronic Arts, Microsoft, Google, and as we'll discuss today, the Walt Disney Company. And this is a true story. Scott and I are in a secret Hollywood cabal of executives and creatives in gaming, movies, media, and journalism. We hit our apex of power probably about 10 years ago, but still going strongish. We're not at liberty to discuss it further, though, because we will be targeted. But I will say, Scott, congratulations, Kelly.
Nice.
What?
Welcome, Scott.
Okay, there's a lot to unpack there. I'm not going to do it right now. We'll do it offline. But you're in a secret Hollywood cabal that you just announced on a podcast that goes around the world. Cool.
Correct.
Cool.
Yeah, and we had to block all of our social media, which is great, a few years back. So that was good.
This will be for subscribers of the Sucks podcast that pay. this is bonus content. We will talk about that secret Hollywood cabal and how you and I can get in.
Yeah, you know, that's probably on the Patreon. That's on the Patreon.
Nice.
All right. And Carlos Campos. Welcome to the pod, Carlos.
Thank you.
Carlos is a working actor who is one of those guys. I don't know what that means. Brad wrote that. You might recognize him if you saw him, but you might not be sure from what. Carlos has been featured in too many things to mention all of them. But to name a few, Westworld, one of my favorites. Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., General Hospital, another one of my favorites. This Is Us. And he stole a scene away from Denzel Washington in Roman J. Israel, Esquire. And of course, Brad's favorite of his credits is the hacker, arsonist, bad guy in CSI Cyber.
Now, you have Carlos, to say it, CSI Cyber.
I thought you were going to say stole a scene from Ted Danson and Mr. Mayor, but
was that true?
Oh yes, wow. I love that one. That's one of my favorites. Now I have to ask you, Carlos, when you stole that scene from Denzel, right before that, did he pull you aside and say, Carlos, remember, when you're at your highest is when the devil comes for you? Did he do that? Because I want to know if he tells it to everybody.
I can't really remember because I was slapped by somebody that I don't even remember who. and it was all sort of like blurry after that.
Hey, it worked for the performance. Mm-hmm. Brilliant performance.
True story.
Yeah, that was like a line, but thank you. it was cool to sit across from Denzel and do a scene. He made a joke at one point. Yeah, he was fun. He was funny. He was great.
Yeah.
But I mean, we had limited interaction.
Yeah. What was the joke? Basically,
he like improvised a take and I ended up like breaking. And then he said, oh, he was trying, you know, to keep a straight face, I think is what happened.
You had to be there. Yeah. Scott, I cut you off. What were you going to say?
Oh, yeah. So I had another question about the CSI Cyber hacker role. Did you have to wear rollerblades? Because we all know hackers wear rollerblades.
Back in the 90s, if you're Angelina Jolie and Johnny Lee Miller, is that where we're going with that? Fisher Stevens?
Right on it.
Cool. I operated a forklift briefly, but there were no rollerblades involved.
So some form of transportation.
Inline skates.
Nice.
Okay, so I also had the pleasure of working with Carlos professionally during my days as a producer and a development executive. And let me tell you sincerely that he is in a different league as an actor. We had a casting call for a project and Carlos came in and literally made the room bust out in tears during a cold read. Like he is good. I've worked with many actors before. Carlos might be the best. So,
jeez.
Ooh, high praise.
Thanks, dude. That's not hyperbole. I mean, this guy is legit. In addition, jeez. Carlos, you were a cast member at Disneyland for over 15 years, beginning in 1997, in Mickey's house in Toontown. And you were a character host there. And then in 1998, you moved to Tomorrowland when they rebranded that land. And you opened the Innovations Pavilion there. And you worked there through 2014. Is that right?
You probably thought I misspelled that, but it's a made up word. It's innovations. And that is innovations and inventions smushed together, as Tom Morrow explained as you entered the building. Man, this is like the longest intro ever. voiced by Nathan Lane, who, you know, is
a great Nathan Lane, friend of the pod.
Oh, cool. The concept was The Carousel of Progress, which is what the building was originally.
Right.
So it was sort of based off of that, the Family of the Future, and then they moved that to Florida. But when we opened the building in 98, that was the concept. So I was one of the sons of the future.
Yeah.
There was a whole family. You know, we had dads and moms and grandmas and grandpas and sons and daughters. And I was one of the sons. So, and then the building morphed and changed over time. But essentially, the idea was showing off technology in Tomorrowland to guests.
That's great. All right. So we're going to go into the news. So we have some relevant news to our topic today. So let's jump right into it.
Brad, you want to go to Florida?
Let's go to Florida, which is something that I wouldn't recommend that we do, but in general. But let's go to Florida.
Beautiful. Come on, Brad. We got a lot of listeners in Florida. It's a beautiful place. A little crazy sometimes. A little
Okay. So what we're going to talk about today is Governor Ron DeSantis and Disney's battle over the Don't Say Gay bill. The so-called Don't Say Gay bill. So in short, Florida recently passed legislation that makes it illegal in schools to talk about or even to mention homosexuality or gender identity. Now, I'm going to give you my take here. And if you disagree, you might want to go ahead and unsubscribe from this podcast. No hard feelings. This bill, now passed into law as of a couple of weeks ago, is reprehensible, vindictive, dangerous. This is a recent pattern of a counterswing on the right to lean heavily into anti-gay positions, which is so out of touch and evil. It really makes me fear for our country, the two-party system in general, and mostly for the safety of some of our most vulnerable populations, especially young people in schools who need fucking help, right?
True.
Okay, so let me take a minute to jump off my soapbox here. I'm going to have to bend the knees because when I land, that's a big soapbox. Okay. By the way, I just read all that verbatim. So, Carlos, I'm interested in your notes as my cold read acting style. All that scripted. I think people know every word of this podcast, including what I'm talking about right now, is scripted.
Yeah. Well, not what I say. I just go off the cuff all the time. Okay. I'm completely unscripted.
I think that's understood. and we enjoy it.
Yeah. I appreciate that, Carlos.
Okay. So back on topic here. Disney, of course, has a large presence in Florida, and new CEO Bob Chapek has really kind of floundered here. You guys agree?
That guy.
First, it came out that they had been giving political donations to supporters of this awful bill. And then they pulled those, but released the neutral kind of non-statement corporate speak from Bob Chapek, which drove Disney employees crazy. There were walkouts, so on and so forth. Then he put a stronger statement out that Disney will work to overturn this law. And that drove the right wing crazy, with chants of Disney being woke. Right? Really disgusting and ugly, and I think terribly mismanaged from Chapek specifically. It's a big, ugly story, and it has exposed some weaknesses on the Disney board and even some fractures between Chapek and the former CEO, the, you know, arguably excellent, in my opinion, Bob Iger. Apparently, they're no longer on speaking terms. Anyway, to bring this home, this brings us back to Florida Governor Ron DeSantis, who's now threatening to take away Disney's special classification to act as its own government in Florida.
What?
Yes,
its own government, Brad?
Its own government in Florida. Scott.
That's what's in this book. Mm-hmm. It's actually really fascinating. It's back when Walt died.
Scott, what is the book you're holding up for our listeners?
Walt and the Promise of Progress City. It's a great book. I recommend it. It goes into Walt and his attempt to create Epcot, the original intent was, it was the experimental prototype community of tomorrow. I'm sure all your listeners know that, but it wasn't meant to be the World's Fair that it is today. Well, they're ruining that too. But anyway, the intent. So what happened is Walt dies. They're still building. They're freaking out because they're like, well, we don't have Walt anymore to really push things. So what they did is they had this film with Walt explaining the build of this. They got all these people in Florida together and they did a screening of it. And these people are like the muckety mucks of Florida, like fancy politicians, all this stuff. At the end of the screening, which everyone's like crying because Walt just died and has Walt in there and everything, they're like, you know, it's going to be really hard for us to build this unless we get a little bit of help from you guys. So what we need from you is, and then they had this like huge bill basically, and they're like, just sign this giant bill that basically made it so that they became their own governing space.
Right.
Wow. They made it so that voting in that area is based off of like how much land you owned. And since they own 90 percent of the land there, they basically had all voting stake of it. And so that whole area has its own special govern setup. And it was very aggressively carved out by Disney.
Are we talking about like a like its own town or more like the Vatican?
Like, it's more like its own. Well, it's in between, right? Like as I see it. The way it's written in this book, I'm sure I might be butchering some of the specifics of it, but it's still, there's more power that this company has in this space than anywhere else, I think, probably in the US. But it's similar to like back in the day when you'd have like GM or whatever, you know, or Ford owning a whole town, right?
Or the coal miners with the company stores and all that.
But it's fascinating. And I think that when DeSantis went after that, I think that's going to be a huge thing business-wise because they have a very protected space there. And this is to me, I'm super surprised that Disney did any of the stuff they do because they've been so carefully just being on the edge of that razor blade of like,
right,
we accept everybody, but we're pretending that we don't also for the right wing, but also we're pretending we do for the left wing, and we have gay days, but we don't really explicitly say we have gay days, and like all this stuff. And it's, and finally Chapek, who's not a people person, you know, whatever, he just stumbled over all his words and kept pushing too far on both ends, which is what Disney's MO is not.
For sure. Huge mistake. And this would not have happened with Bob Iger still at the helm.
He also wants to be a politician too. So,
It's an interesting dichotomy there for Disney with the state of Florida. I mean, they've been there, there's history, but I mean, it's Florida. you mentioned Scott, gay days, and I did want to talk about when I worked there. This was kind of shocking to me because I know firsthand that working at Disneyland Park in Anaheim, California, anyway, Disney, as long as I was there, was very open to hiring gay folks. And there was the gay day there. There was, you know, and there's a whole, you know, people wore red shirts to denote that. And I always think of like, you know, there's like this very cis straight, you know, hetero guy that happens to wear a red shirt and like, why is everybody wearing a red shirt here?
So funny. My hot take though on the bill is I think we should support it. And here's why. I think we should support it and support all parents there. And what they should do is fully support this bill by suing every school that talks about gender in any way. Okay. Whenever they say Mr. or Mrs., be like, hold on a second. That is a gender-based term. You can't do that. If they say he or she, you call them out for that. Any hetero thing, you call them out. If they have a story about a princess, whoa, princess, whoa, what's the deal? You talk about marriage, anything. Like you say, no. And it's like, to me, as a game designer, I'm a nice lawyer, as I like to think of it, a playful lawyer.
Right.
I look at rules and try to figure out how you exploit them so that way you can make a better game so it's not exploitable. This is a broken rule.
Right.
Exploit the hell out of it. And it's like what the Church of Satan does a lot of times, where they'll find a rule and they're like, okay, you want that rule? Let's play then. You want to play with that rule? Let's do it. And I think that, like, let's do it. Let's start suing all the schools and saying, hey, you guys said this. And if you want to, say the quiet stuff real quiet, we're going to make you say it out loud.
Right.
Change the rule, change it so you don't like, you know, saying that no, you know, gay stuff, basically,
right,
and literally make it say the don't say gay bill, as opposed to now where it's like, it's like, no, we know what you want.
We know what you're doing. Well, in summation, fuck Ron DeSantis. And we are ardent supporters of rights for the LGBT community. So, yes, you know,
right on.
If you're not on board with that, please go ahead and unsubscribe. Seriously.
Yeah. Or hate listen to us.
Yeah.
Just hate listen to us.
Okay, let's take a quick break. We'll come back with our main story and more from our expert guest, David.
Hey, Brad.
So, as our users know, you have this unlicensed kitten declawing business as a side hustle, right?
Not declawing. Damn it, Brad. You're trying to make me look like a bad guy. We put the little like nails on them. They're designer nails. We don't cut anything off. But yes, I do have a side hustle.
Gotcha. Well, I know this is something you do as a hobby, but it's time for you to blow up this business and take it to the
absolutely
next level, Dave.
Yes,
right?
Sir. Yeah.
That's where MailChimp. Hey, sorry to interrupt our fake ad read. I thought it was going great. But if you're a real sponsor and like what you hear and want to contact our ad sales department, or if you're just a fan, visit OurPodSucks.com. That's OurPodSUX.com to find out more. And by our ad sales department, I, of course, mean producer Joe. OurPodSucks.com. Now back to the fake ad read currently in progress. MailChimp is more than email marketing tools, Dave.
Okay,
that's what you might know them.
Is there a female chimp?
What I'm trying to sell you is email marketing tools, but more than email marketing tools.
Wait.
It actually has nothing to do with male chimps. MailChimp is the
name.
Why
would they call it MailChimp, Brad?
It's male, M-A-I-L, chimp.
Oh, I gotcha.
MailChimp is intelligent marketing tools, guidance, and inspiration to help you grow that new business, grow your following, even grow your confidence.
Almost as intelligent as humans, I hear about chimps.
Mm-hmm.
Although I don't know if the males or the females are smarter. I'd be curious about that. You know what I'd rather have, Brad?
Mm-hmm.
Bonobos. I'd rather have bonobos.
Well, because next week we can get bonobos as a sponsor.
Yeah, they're a little smaller. You know what I mean? They're probably not as aggressive. I just made that up. But I'd rather, and it kind of rolls off the tip of the tongue. You know, they get confused with chimps, but a bonobo, That's something I'd be interested in, Brad.
I thought you were talking about Bonobos, the men's fashion company.
Is that a real thing?
It's a real thing. I thought that it's a real podcast sponsor. So that's a really organic segue to next week's sponsor, which will be Bonobos. But we're not talking about Bonobos.com today. That's next week. Today we're talking about MailChimp.com.
Oh, my God, man. What is with these companies selling things named after primates? Here's what I'm hearing, Brad. I'm hearing that there is a very sexist naming company namer. Okay, who takes primates,
sure,
and then only focuses on the male primates, right? So Bonobos is a male company, right? It's a male-based clothing company.
Yeah.
And MailChimp straight up is just puts it in their name. What the hell? I want female representation in the primate world.
Okay.
In advertising. That's all I'm saying, Brad.
Visit MailChimp today. MailChimp today. Marketing automations built for growing businesses. So, Dave, I know we're talking about this very special subject today. I have a special guest, unannounced guest, who's here to give us her perspective on Disneyland.
Oh, fantastic.
I will now hand over my headset to our very special guest. One moment.
Okay. Hello. Is this Brad's daughter or is this a random child who has just stumbled onto the set?
It's Brad's daughter.
Oh, fantastic. Welcome, Brad's daughter. So we are talking about Disneyland, and I understand you had an awesome time because this is the most magical place on earth. But I hear there were some hiccups. But did you have any issues? Are there any things that you did not like? Or do you want to start with the things you did like? Why don't we start there? How was your day? Was it fun?
It was really fun, but there were a lot of hiccups. I loved so many rides, and I want to give the world two rides I really recommend to go on like a lot of times.
Oh, fantastic.
One, the Incredicoaster is my favorite, and two, Splash Mountain, my second favorite.
Awesome. Okay, that's great. Yeah, Incredicoaster. Well, who's the kid? The little baby is like Zap Zap. What's his name? Bing Bing? Bob Bob?
Jack-Jack.
Jack-Jack. Yeah, that's all I remember from that ride is Jack-Jack. Jack-Jack. That was fun.
Yeah.
Okay, so what's the problem? What are the hiccups? Let's hear the hiccups.
It's really easy to get lost in Disneyland, which brings me to another transmission, Dad. Transgression. Sorry, world. I'm a second grader.
Yes, big words. I love it. Okay. What is the other transgression?
So sometimes in Disneyland are other paths that people think lead to the same place, but lead to whole other places.
Ooh, okay. Okay.
So we were walking down on what was it? Redwood Adventure Trail. Okay. Yeah. So we were there and we were going down from like the little rope staircases.
Mm-hmm.
And Dad went to the stairs because he wanted to get down before me. And it led to a whole different place. And he got lost and I got lost.
Oh,
so we were separated.
Oh, no.
And it got so bad I needed to alert a park ranger.
And how did they help you out? Were they good? I hear they're pretty good. Okay, good.
They were good, but the point is it's really easy to get lost in Disneyland.
It is.
Yes, because of the design.
And
my second thing is one of the rides are actually dangerous.
Oh, which one?
So Space Mountain, actually.
How so?
So I was on Space Mountain and I was in this side of a car, right? And sometimes when it goes like curving around the cart, I smashed into a metal bar like five different times.
Oh no, that was painful, huh?
And that was during one ride.
Well, that's a very old ride, and I imagine they perfected it. Because one of my complaints, actually a complaint of mine, is about the Jack-Jack ride, is that is the smoothest roller coaster I've ever been on in my life, and it's so Disney. It's just like, I kind of like the, you know, I'm a roller coaster enthusiast. You just got to get knocked around a little.
Smoothest?
I found it pretty smooth. Smoother than Space Mountain, right?
The Incredicoaster?
Incredicoaster, that's it. It's called Jack Jack.
That ride is not smooth.
No. Oh, me. You know what? Maybe I'm a little bit taller than you, so maybe it's where your shoulders and your head land in relation to the headrests. Maybe that's it. Maybe you've got a little more growing to
and
do.
And also on Space Mountain, because of me smashing into the metal bar, I got a bruised bone.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
You have a bruise on your arm?
Yeah, it's still here 4 days after.
Oh, goodness. Wow. Now we're getting into litigious territory, Disneyland. Okay. This took a turn. Well, I'm sorry to hear that. Was there anything else you wanted to say? Maybe something about your father. Something awesome or not so awesome?
My dad got me lost.
You're not going to let that one go, huh?
No.
Okay. Well, we're going to work on that. We're going to work on that. We are solving the world's problems one user experience at a time. And Disney will hear this, and we will get this fixed. Yeah. All right.
Great.
All right. Thank you so much. Marlis, before we jump back into it, I got to ask you, is the mustache, is the whole facial hair with the evil goatee thing, is that for a part? Or is this just...
Or are you in the mirror universe?
Mm-hmm. Mirror universe?
That's what they do in all the Star Treks. Whenever it was an evil person, they would give them a goatee.
Yeah, I was going to reference Knight Rider. Darkest.
Nice. I was going to reference Community, the Darkest Timeline.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah.
It is for a Friends web series. I'm the big bad guy.
Nice.
Yep. Nice. So I went with like a Colonel Sanders meets Pancho Villa kind of situation.
Yeah, I love it.
I like it.
Dig it.
And we are back with our main topic of this week. Really a fun one. You might even say magical. Disneyland.
Yes, sir.
I was at Disneyland twice this week, once by accident. I took my daughter. She's on spring break. We had a great time. We went to the park all goddamn day long from 8 o'clock in the morning till 9 o'clock at night. I'm way too old for that, but I did it anyway. And then yesterday we were there again. She was in a giant dance competition at the Disneyland Hotel. So I was not anticipating going back there, but we did. Her team got first place, of course. So the timing of this episode is pretty great for me. But Dave, let's go over to you first. You don't even like Disneyland. What is it about you that makes you hate happiness?
Yeah, Brett, this may just be a personal problem, but this episode, we're going to explore that and find out, is it just me, or is it them, or is it both? I don't know. I mean, am I getting into it now? It's a general thing for me. I think the biggest thing is like this whole happiest place on earth, right? Mm-hmm. They're just kind of shoving that down your throat, but it's in a place that is unhappy to me, like long lines, traffic, standing out in the sun. You know, it's like all that, like just people bumping into me, like it's very hard to navigate. And I'm just like in a sea of sweaty humans. Like, that's not happy to me. So, you know, it's that. And then it's, you know, it's also for kids. They're getting better with the California Adventures getting better. So until Star Wars, there's like nothing for me to do.
Well, I will say that I didn't really get Disneyland until I started working for the company when I was able to go a whole bunch for free. And then I was able to go with like low sort of expectations and didn't have to worry about cramming everything in and all that stuff. And then I started going all the time. My wife and I would go all the time. We'd go with friends. I don't know. I learned to love it. I never thought that I would be one of those people, but I think I kind of am. You know what I mean? Like people who live in Southern California, you know who I'm talking about. Like people who just go to Disneyland, people without kids.
Disney nerds. Passholes.
I love it.
Yeah. Nice. I don't remember what the other terms are. Foamers.
Right. There's like these bumper stickers you see on the back of cars here in Southern California. It's like AP. It's just like has a Disney logo and then AP on it. And like, I didn't know what that meant for years. And then
what does that mean?
Well, if you get close, the fine print says annual pass holder, I believe.
Right.
The new ones. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
So like, I mean, hundreds, thousands of cars have this sticker on it. Like, that's weird. No offense if you guys have that. But anyhow, I think Disneyland is great and amazing user experience. They put so much thought into the overall experience every step of the way. It really makes every step legitimately kind of feel special. Mm-hmm. And there are a lot of problems, which may not entirely be solvable. I'm going to dive into a little bit of the history really, really generally. I think a lot of the issues with Disneyland stem from the original sin that makes that dates back to 1955 or before. Disneyland is in Anaheim, which today is densely populated. It wasn't back then, but it is small. It is amazingly small. From a design perspective, and they've done an incredible job, remarkable at squeezing so much into that tiny little footprint, squeezing everything that it's worth out of it. It's a huge achievement in design to be able to fit everything, Disneyland, California Adventure, Star Wars on it, Galaxy's Edge, in a parking, downtown Disney, etc. But it is straining at the seams. There's not anything else that they can do with that footprint at this point. So the original sin baked into the Mickey Mouse-shaped cake here is just not big enough to handle the crazy demand. And no matter what they do, there is an audience who is willing to pay for it, but it's creating some friction, I would say. I think that's the kind of how we're focusing on this
inequality as well, right, Brad?
Big time. Pricing inequality and like sort of like this class system that is slowly but steadily being injected into the experience of visiting there.
Oh, I'm sorry. Before we jump in, do we want to, I mean, we talked about this a little in the introductions, but do we want to give each of our guests an opportunity to quickly tell us about their history with Disney?
Yeah, that'd be great. Carlos, we heard about your professional history with Disney. You worked there for 14 years, but before that, like, what was it about Disney that made you want to work there? And how did your feelings change, if at all?
Boy, I was an AP in high school for a couple of years back when it was like $100 for
an annual pass.
And I was an annual pass holder back before that was even a term, I think, for that acronym. But boy, I miss the monorail taking you to the Monorail Cafe the Disneyland Hotel before it was Downtown Disney. Originally hiring in there as a character host when I was still in college, going to Cal State Fullerton for my theater arts degree, very useful. Mm-hmm. And when we were able to park parkside and walk backstage, I hate to mention this, but sure. I think it is worth mentioning now. Now I think that this happens a lot of the time to people that become cast members. They take every opportunity to go in there after shifts, to be there on their days off, to enjoy the reap the rewards of being able to enjoy some of those fringe benefits. But going into the park wasn't like it was, you know. I mean, once you're backstage, and Disney's very good at sight lines. So when you're in the park, something you may not realize is you are not able to see the outside world, with few exceptions. I mean, they have these sight lines very well designed. I mean, I think when you're on the Matterhorn and you're trying and you look outside, you can actually see like Harbor Boulevard at some point. But I mean,
it's disconcerting when you do see the outside world when you're at Disneyland, like the Tower of Terror or the Guardians of the Galaxy ride, you can see.
Oh yeah, that's another one.
It's odd, incongruous.
You're encapsulated in this place, and they've done a masterful job at keeping those sight lines. But when you work there and you go backstage, and it's not pretty, you know. I mean, there are things, you know, and the smells that you encounter at times too. I mean, that takes a lot of the magic out of the equation. But you know, at the same time, you walk down Main Street and there are lovely scents that are pumped out of vents that you don't even realize that are there.
Oh yeah,
that are enticing to go into maybe like a bakery and buy some baked goods, or you know, it took a couple of years to where, I was a little jaded, I guess, and
so to take the magic away,
right?
Took some time,
but it doesn't happen to everybody. Some people, you know, I'm kind of amazed at how they're all about. Oh yeah, no, I'm in there every day or you know, close to enjoying the park. So
hey, Carlos, by the way, both Dave and I both worked at theme parks growing up. I worked at King's Island in Cincinnati. And Dave, you worked at a Six Flags.
Well, in New Jersey, we call it Great Adventure. Everywhere else, they call it Six Flags. But yeah, Great Adventure. I was a ride operator for many years. And my experience was different, Carlos, because I love getting into the back, into the behind the scenes, because it was just cool. And unlike Disney, they don't really try to. Hide those. What do you call them? Sightlines. Because it's actually very cool to get up on top of a roller coaster and see towns away. You know what I mean? It's a totally different experience. And I think that goes back to my problem with Disneyland is I'm a roller coaster guy. Like, I need action and adventure. I don't need the themes as much. You know, I don't need you to tell me a story and pull me in. I need to just like feel it. You know what I mean? But enough about me.
I disagree. Yeah.
Enough about me, Scott. What about you? What is your history with Disney?
Well, real quick,
as
on
a
that,
fan.
Yeah, I would say that I'm kind of the opposite of, I love seeing how things are made. And so to me, it added more magic to see how it was made. So when I would see behind the scenes, I'd see how, I'm just fascinated. I'm like, can I see more? Can I see how this thing was built? How you're doing this trick? How you're doing this visual effect? All those things are things that I just found amazing. So real quick, obviously, like, I used to work for Disney, and obviously nothing I say in any way is a representation of the Walt Disney Company, blah, blah, blah. Don't sue me.
Sure.
or any of us for that matter. But yeah, so when I was a kid, I used to watch the Disney Channel, and I loved a lot of stuff because they had a lot of great educational shows. They had nature shows that I loved. And they also would do the occasional piece about, you know, they'd have Walt talking about building the park, and then occasionally they'd do a thing about Imagineering. And I was like, wow, that'd be a really cool job. But for years, I forgot about it. And then I went to USC, and when I was there doing the interactive media program, one of my professors, she had worked for Imagineering, and I was like, oh, wow, that would be so cool. Nice. And that led to me like getting connected there and eventually working for the Creative Interactive Attractions team, where we were trying to add interactivity into the parks. And we also, our goal was to add living characters into the park so that you could interact with the characters and all these different things. And it was a ton of amazing fun. I feel so lucky to have been able to work with those teams. The talent there is insane. The technologies they have there is amazing. Imagineering is truly one of the most talented, gifted places with the type of talent that's there. It's very impressive. And I am very happy to have done that. And then in regards to like seeing all that stuff, and to me, that just added to the magic of it, of being able to see and actually work on these projects to create some of that magic and really try to hide that, similar to like what a magician does or what like a really good design. And part of that is it's kind of that whole concept of like really good design is just not seen.
Right.
And I think that's a great thing about the parks is that you really don't see
totally
a huge percentage of the effort that's put there.
Yeah.
And that's as intended. And I literally just went to Knott's a little while ago.
Yeah.
And Knott's is great for a variety of reasons.
Knott's Berry Farm amusement park for people who don't live in Southern California.
Just across the street, came before Disney for, there's an interesting history about that. But it was a really rough day.
Yeah.
Really?
Just everything was broken. Mm-hmm. And you know, maybe they're just having a bad day. The everybody working there was just not super chill with like giving you much. You'd just be like, oh man, really?
Right.
That's you giving me that angry vibe is really not helping me have a good day at the park. And then also just like the food was super mediocre at best. And there was just so many people, just sea of people that were poorly directed, so that there was no efficiency. And it just, I think we went on two or maybe three rides for the whole day.
Ugh.
Like literally. And it was that bad. It was just, it was brutal. And at least at Disney, there's a lot of people, but it's efficiently run. Mm-hmm. And it's, they really make sure that things are clean, that the cast members are polite and nice, and they're kind to everybody, hopefully. Food is consistent. Yeah. And also just that while there's a ton of people, they do great job with flow. There's great job with flow. So yeah.
Yeah, for sure. Well, I would say that I've worked for Disney. I worked for them for 7 years, and I would definitely go back there. I think that they do so much good. And their park design is incredible, but This problem that they're trying to solve is around crowds and demand, and the solutions are at times contrary to their core brand promise, and it creates friction and inequality, which is what we want to dive into today.
Yeah.
So for reference, let's just start with talking about pricing. A one-day park hopper ticket, I looked this morning, the next available reservation that I could even get, and we'll get into reservations in a moment, is for next Saturday. So if I wanted to go tomorrow, I couldn't do it, no matter at any price point. But the next available time that I could go is next Saturday, and it would cost me $224 for a park hopper ticket. So that's a grand for a family of four, and that's before you even park.
Now, park hopper, Brad, that's to get into both parks, to get into California Adventure and Disney. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. So that's California Adventure and Disneyland.
And no parking.
No parking, no food, no nothing. $1,000. Well, I went, like I said, I went last Wednesday midweek, and I was fortunate enough to have free tickets from a friend who works there. But even with those free tickets, I easily dropped $500 while I was there for the day. And that was like with me and my daughter. It was just us two, and dropped $500, probably more, between, let's call it $500 and $600. I'm in a position of privilege where I can almost not really pretend to afford this, but not really.
You can afford it. You can afford it, folks.
But also, yeah, the free ticket helps a lot.
The free tickets helps a lot. So that was
Cool. I've never paid. I've paid for one ticket all these years because of you, Brad, and other folks.
I can't believe that you hate it, considering that you've gotten so much mileage out of it.
Maybe if I paid for it, I would like it more. I don't know. I don't hate it. It's grown on me. Star Wars has pulled me in. I because I'm not a kid. But go back to your thing.
Well, anyway, I don't think you have to be a kid later to enjoy Disneyland, but here nor there. I think we can break down their solves for crowd and demand in two buckets. There's equitable solutions and inequitable solutions. The equitable ones are fair, but maybe annoying. And the inequitable ones, they solve for the problem, but not fairly at all. Basically, it solves the problem for people who can afford to pay even more than that grand to get into the park for a family of four.
Brad Coons.
And not just a little bit, but like a lot more.
So one thing that I want to throw out, just because there was a big upcry, there's a huge cry about the Star Wars, say hotel, just because everyone's calling it that, and that'll probably anger some people. And people are like, oh my God, that's so expensive. And I'm like, yeah, it is. But let's break down that price. And same thing with the park. Let's break down those prices and really think through what you're getting.
Yep.
You're getting entertainment all day. All day. That's, from 8 a.m. till 10 p.m., depending, maybe midnight, even later. That's a lot of hours of entertainment.
Yeah.
And for the hotel, same thing. Mm-hmm. You have many cast members some are actual actors, some are people who are, partially acting. There's a huge range of things. Yeah. You have a ton of different physical things that have to be kept up. You have when you start really breaking it all down, and as somebody who actually has worked, so I work for Imagineering, but I have a company where we were making immersive experiences, and they're really expensive to do. If you want to pay people properly, they're expensive. So that's a separate thing. We don't need to go into that of the issue of paying people properly and the parks. But I think that that's something that people have to understand. And this is a bigger issue of how are we valuing art and things in our world, and how do we make it so that's reasonable? Mm-hmm. And it's tough because there are so many things going on in that park, and same thing with the hotel. So yeah, it is really expensive. But the question is, again, what is equitable and inequitable, and what do we think is fair to bring people into those spaces when you have a limit of just physical space and people? Scott, and I think it's a great theoretical question to ask. Yeah.
I think you hit the nail on the head for me. It's your expectations. You said entertainment, and I'm doing air quotes because for me it's air quotes, but for you, for a lot of people, it's non air quotes, right? So if I'm a 4-year old kid, every single experience there is entertainment. It's immersive. It's, oh, there's Goofy. Oh, there's Mickey Mouse. Look, I'm inside a castle. Let's take a picture here. Let's go on this ride. But for me as a grown adult, and this has started before I had kids. Once I had kids, I liked it a little bit more, and now they brought Star Wars and I love it. But for me, it was I'm going here. It's a small world. I'm all about rides. I'm I don't care that there's a guy in a Goofy costume.
I don't care aware that my child's smiling.
Yeah, no, I'm saying I'm saying before I had kids, this is how I approached it. I was like, what is there for me here? So the entertainment value for me, it's like and I know there are people who love this because they grew up watching Disney movies. I have friends who are obsessed and they just get instantly plugged in to the experience. It's almost like putting on a virtual reality headset and they're in. So I could totally get on board with what you're saying and justifying the price. But then there are other people like myself who like love rides and just want to get on rides and as many rides as they can. And to your earlier point about Knott's, I have the same issue with Disney. Like I only on a busy day, I only get on a couple of rides and I'm not mad because I got in for free. But if I had paid, what is it, Brad? $250 a ticket? I would be livid.
Wait, Dave. There's a guy in a Goofy costume? That's not Goofy?
That's Goofy, Dave. That's not a costume.
I misspoke. That was actually Mickey Mouse.
I misspoke. I apologize.
You should be ashamed of yourself, guy in a Goofy costume. Kids listening to this show.
Coincidentally, that same guy can also fit in a Darth Vader costume because he's the same height, which is hilarious, I think. And there's some great stories about that, which is great. Because it's based on height, right? So, you know.
Oh, wow. Okay. Yeah.
I have no idea what you are talking about.
It's Darth Vader and Goofy.
They are the same person.
They might happen to be of a similar height, but that is actually Darth Vader. How dare you?
Coincidental.
I'm having nightmares tonight.
Okay, let's get into some of the topics here. We have equitable solutions. So this is how I've outlined it, and this is arguable at best, but I'll run through some of them. The reservation system, number one, it's equitable, meaning that no matter how much money I have or don't have, I can't get a reservation for any other time, you know, other than what's available. So there are some exceptions to that. If you want to buy, what do they call the magic key, the annual pass, that's what they're calling it now. But even those are not really available right now. Anyhow, I had problems with the system. I tried to book reservations for last Wednesday. It read as nothing available. And then I asked another friend who works at Disney, not the one who gave me the tickets, but another person. And they directed me to another website that actually had the real dates. So there's just some like technical problems with this reservation system and very confusing.
Brad, do they still do the thing where you have to select which park you're starting at? I thought that was a COVID thing, but is that still in place?
Still in place.
Because it wasn't clear whether I could get into both places.
It's a little confusing, yeah. So I got into California Adventure first, and then I was able, only at 1 o'clock, and they were strict about this, to go over to the other park at 1 o'clock, and then I could go back and forth.
The other problem they have is they're trying to integrate all of their websites into, like, one website for Disney, and that's just, like, too many IPs, too many, like, don't do it. Just have a separate pages. It's okay, guys. You don't need to have, like, Disney page that has everything. Like, no. Oh, my God. Yeah. Just have a separate website.
Yeah, fine. You're talking to a guy who used to work and manage Disney.com for years.
Right?
I totally
get
it.
Oh, God. That's a nightmare.
So the lottery system, that's deprecated now, but this was an equitable but annoying solution to getting on rides, I think, if I'm reading this right. So you would have to, at 7 o'clock in the morning, you'd have to use the Disney app and then Disneyland app, pardon me. And it's a lottery system. If you were there right on the button, you could get that reservation for the Star Wars Galaxy.
Well, even if you were there at 7 a.m., I tried this and it wasn't guaranteed. I sure didn't get one. But I have a funny story about conning my way into that ride still. I tried it noon as well. You needed a reservation. I went there. I thought there would still be a line you could wait in. There was not, which made me even more upset. So then I went online and looked up, all right, Star Wars Rise of the Resistance reservations. And eventually one came up and it was, you know, a number and they'd come back at 1:30. I set an alarm, went back there, took a screenshot of it, showed them my phone. Okay. They waved me into the line. The problem was they had to scan something after that later on in the queue.
Yes.
But then I turned my phone off and said, my phone died. It was super low on battery. And they just basically like, let me in, which is awesome.
Brilliant. So, nice. Yeah. See, Brad, that's what we should have done, Brad. So Brad and I went and we got kicked out because we thought, okay, our time starts at, let's say it's 1:30 and it's like 12:30. We're like, that line's so long. We want to be at the front of this 130 line. So we joined the line. We got all the way to where they do that second scan. And they said, it's only 128. And they kicked us out. We had to wait in the whole line all over again.
Yes. Because you were 2 minutes garbage. Early.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it might have been 10 minutes. But the point is, we were jumping the queue. But really, were we? Like, we still waited in that line. We were trying to jump it
in time in tandem with the expected time, because we expected to be in this line for 10 minutes, at which point they would read the reservation. It would be right on the button. And we mistimed it by like 3 minutes or something.
Yeah, and it's messed up. It was almost a half hour. So we had to wait in the line twice.
Yeah.
Our fault, but kind of like they wouldn't redeem it. They wouldn't say, oh, yeah, you already waited in the line, so you could come to the front, that point again. No, we had to wait. Yeah.
So here's why this is a problem, right? Because if you're a family and this is your big vacation, let's say that you get 1 day or you get 2 days or whatever it is, you got to get on that Star Wars ride to get the most of your experience.
Right.
And a lot of people can't do that. And this is supply and demand. It's just like, it's not designed to be able to accommodate all these guests. So that's going to be really disappointing for a lot of people. Anyhow, speaking of which, smart lines, I think this is another smart and equitable solution. And these I look at this as lines that are part of the experience, just to make it a little less painful. If you're going to have to wait in line for 90 minutes plus, make it part of the experience. And they're doing this better now than in previous years.
Yeah, everybody tries to do this. The
Millennium Falcon ride, I think it's a great example.
Yeah, everybody tries this.
The interactive ones? Mm-hmm. Is that what you're saying? So
Guardians of the Galaxy, that's another great one.
Temple's Forbidden Eye, if they still call it that, Indiana Jones.
Well, that one's broken because of FastPass. They broke it. That's what the team that I was on, that was what our goal was we are creating the interactive lines, basically. And our whole thing was we literally were seeing major problems of people getting in altercations in lines because they're long and it's awful and people are hot and it's just not fun, especially in Florida where it's just muggy and awful. So the whole thing was like, let's look at the big line ticket, e-ticket type things and figure out ways to make them entertaining. And we started with Space Mountain, which was really a fascinating learn case. We'd learned a ton about it. They took out a lot of the stuff a couple of years ago, I think. But we learned a ton of how to do that. And that's why we have a lot of those interactive lines. I'd say that I think some are better than others. I think the stuff for Star Wars is okay-ish. It's a little tedious. And I think it just kind of gets to be the same interaction over and over. And it feels a little cheap for Disney, I think, because it feels like the same thing over and over. And it got to a point where I'm like, cool, so I'm a paper pusher for the rebellion? Like, I've just sent in another paper saying I found this box. Like, this is not the fantasy when I think Star Wars that I'm living up to. Me sitting in the Death Star, like, hey, I got another paperwork for you. Can you fill this out? Like, shipment just came in.
Doing TSR reports for the
TPS or whatever.
Well, which ride is this? I don't remember being a paper pusher.
So you're talking about like you're the engineer class when you're on the ride. Is that it? Because
talking about just when I'm doing the basic with my phone attraction.
Yeah. I haven't done that. You're talking about the AR kind of element to this that I've never used.
They added in the line.
Tell us about this, because I've never used any of these for the park.
And it has a great heritage of like some cool stuff that they did with Phineas and Ferb, which before that was Kim Possible in Epcot and all that. And there's some really cool. And then the cards that they did in Magic Kingdom, which is a card game, which is really neat. Mm-hmm. And this is a variation of that. What they do is they basically sign in and it turns it into a data pad from Star Wars, and you can help out different characters basically. Mm. And so you're going through and you're trying to find different items for them, but literally it's finding QR codes on objects, handing them, and then saying, I found this thing, and then being like, cool, you found it. Good job. You get 5 points or whatever. And I'm like, so now I'm working in an Amazon warehouse scanning things.
Right.
Like, this is not the fantasy. And and there's other things you do too. Like, but it's like count the number of exhaust ports on the Millennium Falcon. I'm like, no, that's not fun. Like, these are not the fantasies. And that's what's funny is like, I remember, when we worked there, like a lot of the interaction stuff, we were trying to fill into like personalizing stuff and like a lot of these different things. And this basically became like a cheaper way of adding interactivity.
Right.
But that doesn't fill any of the fantasies of the theme of the world. They're just kind of barely fitting into it. And it's like, this is not what people want.
So
people
Scott,
play it, but it's not.
Brett, Brad, when you were talking smart lines, are you talking more about the theme and all the things that you can do in the Star Wars line? Because that I appreciate and love, because when I worked at Six Flags, I opened up the, this is how old I am, the Batman ride, right? And it was like, it's a big moment. Like, I loved it. We put on the tuxes.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, there was just so much going on in that line. And you, as you came up, you know, it was just a really cool experience. The line was ridiculous. The line, the ride itself was poorly built. It was a hanging coaster and it took forever to load. Mm-hmm. So all that theming didn't really help. But I think in Star Wars, the stuff we experienced in Star Wars, I thought was really cool, especially since parts of that ride, there's riding elements as part of the line. Does that make sense? Like when you get in that, that what is it called? Where you got the screen on both sides and
you're in the people mover type transport ship, and then you're in a space battle and you're still all in line. You're not on a ride, really. It is on like a gimbal
thing. Yeah, yeah.
You can see the you know, the space battle outside. Then you're sucked into the Star Destroyer, and then the doors open, and you're still in line. You're not on the ride proper yet.
Right.
But now you're in a different queue, but you're
which is brilliant.
In the hangar bay of a Star Destroyer, and which it's is gorgeous, and it's to scale, and it's like
stormtroopers lined up.
No spoiler alerts. No spoiler alerts. But I'm telling you, if you haven't seen it on the internet, go in without seeing anything, because I went that way, and it was blew my mind. But if you mean a smart line in that sense, yes. But I think, Scott, what you're talking about is
interactivity in the lines.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of
I think once we get the glasses, like once we get AR, I think it's going to be even more amazing. Well, to me,
I think it's cool, but I think it's so much cooler when they do it physically. Like, for instance, in the Peter Pan line, they have a little lamp that has Tinkerbell appear in it.
I saw
that. Like, I've seen people doing that. Like, that's great. And the more you can do it in the physical world, that's what Disney does well. And that is what brings magic into the world. We all know how AR works, but you don't necessarily know when you see something in the physical world change. Like, that's amazing.
So and, it'll be AR in the sense that things will appear in your field. Like if you're holding up
your phone. Yeah, but it's different when you have a technology on there versus when you see it physically appear. Like, for instance, there was a really great effect in the Kim Possible one, which now is the Phineas and Ferb one, where you go into the Japanese pavilion and the final thing that you do is you beat this like robot boss character. But what's crazy is you're in the gift store and they have these like giant like spaces where you put like random toys on a central pedestal thing that are around it. And in the middle of this like piece, this giant robot appears like lifted up out of the center of this, you know, kiosk space. And it's like looking around. It's like burp, burp, making all these weird robot noises with red eyes and everything. And everyone's like, everyone else in the is looking up like, what is going on? And you're the one who's doing it. And then you disable the robot and it like burps and then like goes away. And it's so cool because you did that and it was in the physical world. Like, that is magic. When it's using your phone, it's like, technology I've seen this. Yeah. Like Pokemon does
the real world. Yeah. That makes a whole lot of sense to me. Nice.
And that to me is what's fascinating. And there's so many ways to do that. And they, and that was what the goal of a lot of those rides were. Like there's the Hapu Honeywall, which is like projection based. There is, they're doing stuff with Dumbo and the Rock and Roller Coaster. There's multiple interactive rides. And those are mainly in Florida. That's why.
So, Scott, what you're talking about is...
There's a few here in Disney, in Disneyland, but not as many.
Is this kind of like gamifying the experience? Is that...
It's just adding interactivity. Like, gamifying would be more of like specific goals. They did kind of gamify with the app because they're trying to make it so you do additional things, but then they give you arbitrary... The problem is when you gamify things with no purpose for the points you're giving the player, then it doesn't matter. So like, oh, cool. Now I have 5,000 credits.
What if you get to skip the queue at one of the right? You know what I mean?
Like, I can't spend them on anything, but I got it. And then you're like, then that's when you realize as a player, these points are pointless. Like, which is hilarious to say that.
Yes.
but yeah, so, but to me, the more you can do the physical space, and that's what I love with the team that we were with, the CIA, the Creative Interactive Attractions, is that we were adding interactivity to the lines and making them like smarter lines where it's physical.
Nice. Okay, so good solutions I'm hearing.
Yeah.
Not fully realized yet, but on their way.
Dave, I think you chatted down the ticket books, e-tickets. Oh,
this is what I threw this in.
Great,
That was semi-equitable, debatably. So back when the park opened, you were given books, ticket books. And in your ticket book, it would have a specific number of tickets for the rides. You'd only have a certain number of e-tickets, which were the big ones like Space Mountain type things. And then you'd have additional ones that would go. And so rides were rated depending on where they would think, like how many people would go to it, right? Mm-hmm. What was cool about this is you would only have a certain number of those. And then you'd go and you'd use the ticket and that would be your ride of that type.
Yeah.
You'd have more of like the A tickets and the B tickets, right? And less as it went up. What was cool about that is then the park knew which rides people really wanted to go on. So you'd have a clear voting structure because people had to make a choice. And two, it made it so that everybody had a certain number. Technically, I think you could buy more books if you wanted. So it's in between equitable and inequitable, depending on how we see that.
Yeah.
But it limited what people would do in a good way, I think. So you had to make a choice. And I think they think they're kind of doing that with the new versions, which we can transition into. But
it was designed to manage the flow even back then.
Yep.
So that makes some sense. Let's jump over to the inequitable solutions that they put into place. And these are recent. You know, I'm going to argue that most of these are recent changes that, you know, one of them is 10 years old, but the rest of them are within the last couple
of years. Real quick, I'm going to throw something in. I think that'll help frame this is one of the things that we already know about a lot of corporations is that when somebody comes in as CEO, it's generally they're going to make more money if they do the quick make money in the first year as opposed to long term. So everyone's thinking short term because of bonuses, stock price, all that stuff. I'd say the same thing here. The parks are run separately like their own businesses. It's not like you still have a CEO of Disney who can affect the parks, but parks are run separately from Imagineering, from everything else. So people have to understand that. So whoever that, you know, president or, you know, person who runs the park, they're going to make some calls. And usually when you get a new one in, they fire a ton of people.
Yep.
So in that regard of like short-term, long-term, here's a quick story about one of the issues around that. The people in the parks work really hard, and especially the people who do a lot of the maintenance. They have a ton of things on their list of like ton of things they have to do every night when the park closes. They're working there from midnight till whenever, right? In the morning. So at one point there was a new, you know, head of the parks or head of Disneyland. They ended up doing layoffs because they're trying to show that they're making profit. And they didn't really pay attention to who they laid off. They didn't pay attention to who did what jobs.
That makes
sense. So 2 weeks later, the carousel, King Arthur's carousel, starts smoking.
Oh God.
And E stop because, oh God, this could be on fire. What's happening? They stop it, get everyone off of it. They realize it was a little bit on fire because nobody had oiled it for the last 2 weeks or longer. Because
they let go of the guy whose job it was to oil this thing for the past 40 years.
Exactly. And not only that, but like, what is that guy's salary? Like between 30 and 70K a year. Mm-hmm. And this carousel costs millions of dollars to fix.
Yeah.
So it's that short term like gain versus long term view of like, you know, and it's what we measure is what we end up, you know, affecting. Yeah. And they measure the number of people in the parks and the throughput. They don't measure quality of experience. They don't measure those things. And they kind of do, but not in the same way.
Right.
In my mind, that guy who got fired has Carlos's mustache situation. He's twirling it and walking off with the empty gas canister.
Right. Yeah. Right.
That's exactly what happened.
Anyway, so I think that like to me, it's an interesting way of which it kind of frames the issue around the short term versus long term and the issue of quality versus quantity.
I would also say that from a corporate perspective, when you make those changes, you have to empower people to be able to make mistakes and you have to give people a window. And we're in that window right now.
Yeah.
So some of these inequitable solutions might not be forever, but they are right now. And like for the listener who doesn't know, Bob Chapek used to be the head of parks. So he was promoted to CEO, you know, the head of Disney, taking over from Bob Iger. That created a vacuum in the parks, and they have new people running the park systems now. All this has happened within the last 2 years. So you got a lot of people, to your point, Scott, making big moves and changes and trying to prove their worth in the short term.
And also a lot of people, though, like a lot of people see Chapek, again, for good or bad or for fairness or not, of a bean counter and more of somebody who's less on the creative end. And I don't think that's entirely unfounded. I don't think his background is creative. And I think that his, to be fair, is like he wants to up numbers. And that's kind of what he feels is the best way to do it. But I think that's a little short-sighted. And as we'll see with the huge brain drain that I think we'll see at Imagineering over the next couple of years, because not 90% of those people do not want to move to Florida. And we'll see what happens.
Ooh, I heard about that.
Yeah.
I heard they're moving the staff to Florida, right?
Yeah. And I think they're going to lose a lot of people.
They will.
I'm sure
that's tough.
Of course. I know.
Yeah.
So Brad, let's jump into these inequitable things that you want to discuss.
I can talk about this because I've just gone through this. And again, you know, I was in a position where I've been able to kind of sort of maybe afford this, but a lot of people aren't in the same boat. So the first one is the Genie Plus FastPass replacement system. So they used to have this FastPass system where, you know, it was first come, first serve. You could go in, you could take your ticket, and you could reserve your spot in a line for at a later time. Let's call it FastPass. Didn't cost anything else. They've replaced that with something called Genie Plus through the Disneyland app, where you have to pay for the privilege of reserving online your ride reservation. You can do one at a time. Used to be free. Now it's not free. So for a family of four, I forget how much it is, but it's, I think, $30 a person. It's something per around
ride.
There.
It varies.
Per ride.
Oh, well, there's the yeah. So there's the per ride, but there's also the separate thing you get, right?
Exactly. So that's another thing. So the Genie Plus is, one size fits all. You pay one price. I think it's $30 per person. And for that, you can make reservations, formerly FastPass reservations, and you also get free photos. So that's the other value add that probably people don't really care about. I didn't. You know, it's not a value add for me, but it's part of it. So you pay $30 and then, you know, those photographers, you can have access to those photos. In addition to that, they also have lightning passes. This is a separate thing and a separate cost. So for the certain high traffic, high demand rides like Star Wars Rise of the Resistance and Spider-Man Web Slingers, you can also pay for this privilege of reserving your spot. So in addition to, you still have to have the Genie Plus, which is $30. On top of that, I had to pay $18 a person, $18 a person, $18 a person to reserve a spot for Star Wars Rise of the Resistance.
Just that ride.
Just for that one ride.
Okay, I'm confused, Brad. Genie Plus is $30 to just have the privilege to do these things, or is it per ride?
Sounds so like for certain rides have a fast pass type system. Right. So that's what you're using Genie Plus for. However, there are premium rides.
Got it.
That you next need tier. An extra.
Exactly.
The super fancy ones, the newest ones.
Okay. Exactly. So I was able to use the Genie Plus to get a reservation for Splash Mountain. Right.
Okay.
And then the lightning passes for Star Wars Rise of Resistance and for the Spider-Man ride, both are new. Mm. I had to pay $18 for one. And then I think $15 a person for the other.
Oh my goodness.
I'm guessing the 15 was the Spider-Man, right?
I think it was 15. I'm close here, but I might not
be
exact.
Was it worth it?
No.
You said it was, Brad.
For $15 a person?
I can't say that it was. Here's what made it worth it. Like, to be honest, it was worth not waiting in line for 90 minutes.
And that's what it's for.
I mean, that's what you're paying for,
right? and that's where it gets really tricky. Like, you know, you're spending all this money to get into the park. Do you want to spend all that money to ride three rides? No.
Yeah.
I want to spend all that money to ride eight rides.
Yeah. You know who has the best dad and who has the worst dad? Brad's daughter has the best dad, because for me, you know, it's a moment to talk about class struggle.
Talked about class struggle.
My daughter wants so bad. Oh, that's good. He's like, I'm going to talk about this, but I'm still going to buy you the ticket. For me, for my poor daughter, she's like, why don't you just do it? Look at those people. They're having a good time. They're doing it. And I'm like, yeah, but it's to get the principle. I don't like it. Meh. And then I don't do it. And then we're miserable for 90 minutes yelling at each other.
I respect that. Well,
kudos to you, Brad. Kudos to you. And kudos to me,
I guess. We definitely checked our privilege and we talked about how fortunate that, you know, she is to be able to, you know, do it. Because, like, I mean, a family of four, we're talking another $300 probably to do what my daughter and I did. Cost us $150. It probably cost a family of four $300, double that, whatever. And that's.
Yeah,
that's a lot of money. Like, you know, if
happiness isn't
for a lot of people, that's a lot of money. Myself, that's a lot of money, right? Happiness isn't free. And this is on top of everything else, right? So anyway, that's a lot of money and it's class based. If you can afford it, you're lucky. And if you can't, you're shit out of luck because you're going to be waiting in line for 90 minutes times a day. And that's your day.
Genie Plus and Lightning Passes. What else you got, Brad?
The Magic Key Annual Pass. So this is the replacement for the annual pass holder thing. There are different tiers. There's four tiers and it's very confusing and, they're all availability based, and I don't have all the classifications down, but if you go the cheapest tier, then basically you can go midweek. Off season. Overgeneralization.
Yeah.
But that's basically what it is. And then the highest tier, you can go whenever you want, but that costs like three times the amount of money.
Right. Right. Yeah. That makes sense. Then, if you're without a job, it's perfect.
Well, cheaper. I actually do know screenwriters. During the week. Yeah. I do know screenwriters. I think one of them listens to this podcast at least, where he would go to, he had the annual pass and he would go and write from the Indiana Jones.
I love it.
And it's a great, like,
you know what I'm talking about, Scott.
Oh, yeah. It's beautiful, though. Like, it's a great place to, like, you know, sit by, like, the cafe or whatever, and just you get nice sound and, like, it's chill and
people watching. Yeah. It's ideal.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then the last one that I had is the Magic Bands. Now, this has been around for probably 10 years now. This is only in Florida.
From the boats originally. It's
From the cruises.
From the cruises.
Because I was working at Disney during this time. They are these bands that you wear on your wrist. It's an RFID-based payment system. So this was before every phone had contact payments on them. You know, your Magic Band would do that. You would hover it over the thing, and that's how you would pay. It was a billion-dollar initiative designed, let's not bullshit here, to hide how much people are spending when they're in the park.
Right, and
It makes sense. Like, I don't want to think about how much I'm spending, but I should.
So wait, do they do this anymore? I mean, it seems to be ancient now that you can do with your phone. You can just hold your phone up and pay for stuff.
If you stay at the hotels, I think they do. At least they did a few years ago when I last went for a project.
Okay. They did at Aulani 4 years ago.
Now, do kids get their own bands too, or is this strictly a parent thing? Because this sounds dangerous.
Oh. No, but what they do is you can limit. I think you have control.
Okay.
And you get
you give them an allowance or something.
What happens if you lose your band? Is it sync with your DNA?
Yes, it actually injects into you with nanobots.
Right.
That make you love Disney even more.
I'm just saying,
put in the vaccine. Is that right, Scott?
Oh, yeah.
Well, I think we've come to sort of the natural conclusion of our main segment here. They have these solutions that seem to favor people who can afford it. I understand it. I'm a capitalist. I really am. But Disney has this, you know, this brand promise and this brand value that all these solutions seems like they're kind of running or kind of skirting around those.
Yeah.
But I have a question for you as a, you know, as a capitalist as you are, do you think the original design and intent of the park was purely capitalistic in its original design of the ways in which it was letting people go through it?
Well, that's a big question.
Yeah, it is.
Well, it's the words as you see as you enter the park. I mean, it was designed for everyone.
Yeah,
that was Walt's intention anyway. We can assume.
I think so. I mean, I think that he had an egalitarian view of people going through the parks.
That's why I said it was a big question, because that is the stated intent of Walt. Yeah. And then the question is that true? And I believe that it is. You know, I believe that
I think it is.
But well, I'm sure he wanted to make money too. I'm sure he wanted to make money.
Yeah, I think he did. But he also, like, in that regard, especially going back to Walt and the Promise of Progress City there, in that he talks about, like, a big part of it was creating these spaces to change people. It was about selling things for sure. And basically Roy wouldn't have allowed him to make half the stuff he wanted to make without some form of, you know, capitalism and way to capitalize on it. But like Epcot, that was more of like he wanted to make a city that was for a better place for humanity. And I think that that's something that's a little lost today, especially like if we look at a park like Epcot, where a big part of it was about education. And to me, as a nerdy kid, it was my favorite park. I loved learning about science in a theme park. What? Yeah. Oh, my God. I'm all over that.
It's my favorite thing.
And now they're throwing in characters. They're taking out a lot of the educational stuff. And it's like, that kills me. It's no longer about making the world better. It's about making money.
Yeah.
I mean, you do have a Figment, stuffed Figment like behind you, though, Scott.
So. Oh, yeah. I remember that thing.
I hid that one in there for you guys.
Yeah.
I love it. You know what? I will tell you that I had a great experience. You know, it cost me, but it was fairly cool, you know, and like we were able to do all the things. We were able to go on the rides that I wanted to go on, but at a cost, right? And it's a cost that I don't think that everyone can afford.
But I also went, like a friend of mine, I was lucky enough that a friend invited me to the parks. Mm-hmm. They had a plaid. They are sometimes called.
Oh, I love the plaids.
And basically what they are is they're a concierge person who basically will take your group and walk you up to the front of every line. Literally, like, while you're waiting in line, which you're not waiting that long, like usually it's the fast pass line. You can be like, you know what? I really could use a a beignet, they'd be like, I'll get it. And they'll run and go get it while you were riding the ride.
VIP tour with guest relations.
Yeah, it's crazy. And it's an amazing experience. But also, like, the cost is insane. Or you're a VIP.
Once you've had it, it's really hard to go back.
Yeah. It is. But so here's the thing. You guys, you hit on something that is perfect that they can do not at that price point. Yeah. Like, just a simple thing, like, so many lines in amusement parks don't have water fountains. You know what I mean? And maybe that's thought about. Maybe they're like, oh, then people will have to pee and we'll have to provide bathrooms. But why not? Why not have entertainment? Why not have soda machines and food? Like, why do you make corral me into this line? Don't even put an umbrella up in some instances. So the heat is beating on my head. It just seems kind of weird that they haven't thought more about the line experience. And I think putting me in, like, starting the ride earlier, like we talked about with Star Wars, I think is a brilliant idea. But just the basics of providing
food. I mean, we have. Like, literally, that was my job. I was literally trying to do that. The thing with this current iteration, though, is if you look at it from a incentive perspective, you're incentivizing the park to have worse lines because you're going to get more people to pay to skip that line.
Yeah.
Right. Mm. Like, you're literally setting it up so that you're setting the people against themselves.
That's right.
And it's a really tough thing if you're going to set that incentive in the system you're creating.
It's kind of like the carpool lane. Eventually that gets clogged.
Yep.
That's my worry is you're going to pay for this and then you're going to be sitting in a long fast pass line.
Yeah. Well, especially the carpool lanes that allow you to buy it there, which there are in California.
Yeah, for sure.
I mean, I think if you're at Disney, you know, I think it's always a good investment to have like a wide brimmed hat and some sunblock.
For one thing, it's always 10 degrees warmer inside Disneyland than what the weather says. And I can't explain it, but it's true.
I think it's because of pavement and a bunch of other things. Yeah, for sure.
Interesting.
All right. Well, let's land this plane. Let's get into plugs. Hit the theme. I'm just kidding. We don't have a theme for plugs. But Carlos, is there anything that you'd like to plug? This episode will drop on Wednesday, this coming Wednesday, just so you know.
Yeah, actually, there's a three friends of mine and I were doing a Zoom stand up on Friday, April 8th. And I'm emceeing it. So that's what's the email to send it to? I'll tell you in a minute. But basically, it's and then, you know, I think it's like $3 we're asking, and then we're donating it to Ukraine.
Fantastic.
Amazing.
Awesome. So
love it. I think it's on your LOL stand up comedy show on Zoom.
Yeah, there you go. That's something. I found it. Nice job. Look at you. You're quick.
Okay, so it's gonna be at brianstoops@yahoo.com.
Yeah. Venmo, PayPal or Venmo him, brianstoops@yahoo.com.
brianstoops@yahoo.com.
And this is 6:30 PM Pacific on Friday. Thanks.
Okay. Fantastic.
Cool.
Thanks, guys. Yeah.
Definitely going. Brad and I, we're going to go. We're going to do it.
We will, for sure. Okay.
Scott, what do you have to plug?
I mean, a lot of the stuff I'm working on right now is still being produced and still not to be talked about yet. So I'm working on an AR project. That'll be fun. Working with a French company that just won a Peabody. So that was great.
Hey, nice.
Nice. Congrats.
But I'll just plug two friends things because why not? One, Indiecade is great. If you are familiar with Indiecade, they're amazing. And if you want some innovative games and innovative thoughts in where games should go, I think you should check it out. They do great festivals in both California, LA, and also Europe nowadays. And that is where you will find the future, I think, of interactivity. And then a podcast called Reckless Attack that a friend of mine does. That's another one of the many on the list of D&D podcasts, but has been slowly working its way up the charts. So I figured I'd plug some other friend's stuff instead of my own, you know?
Nice. Why not? Classic. Good man.
Well, we can have you back on when some of your projects are ready.
Exactly. Well, I appreciate it. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, guys, thank you so much. This is a great conversation. Really appreciate it.
It's a pleasure. Yeah. Thanks for having
me. Yeah, of course. Hopefully you guys can come back soon. That is our episode. And I think what we've learned here is that the real Disneyland was the friends we made along the way.
Oh.
And to our users, thank you for listening to Sucks. We are wishing you health, a well-designed life, and good experiences.
that was good stuff, guys. A lot of content. I love it. A lot of it's going to get cut.
Yeah, I'm sure. That's fine. Just as long as you don't cut the part where it's like, I think we should support it, and then just cut the rest of that part.
That's all it's going to be in there. Yeah.
Like, I think we should support this bill. Cut.
Wow.
Well, anyway, that was weird.
And then I'll cut up Brad going, and fuck Scott.
Yeah.